two handouts. One was a copy of a position paper that over the course of the past year the commission has developed, and it lays out the some of the background considerations, why the commission felt that there was good reason to look to some reform of the existing legislation. The second is there's a number of stapled together handouts and a chart, a copy of which is up on the wall, that you may want to look at a later time. And what it is a timeline that shows the series of actions that would be involved from the beginning to the conclusion for a petition that would be initiated in this process. And what it does, too, is relate over here that process to existing law, or how it parallels provisions now in law. This again goes back to a point that Senator Wilkin made, that we have done our best to fit this new idea as well as we could into the existing structure with minimal changes to the legislation as it now exists. I'm going to move forward to page 3 of my remarks, which mainly address not the legislation itself, but the Commission's view of what its role would be in implementing this legislation. This is where on the page 3 I begin. Let me raise and discuss directly some concerns that should be part of the legislative and public discussion about this bill. There certainly are, will be concerns that that this legislation triggers in among many residents of the unorganized areas. First, let me say that in the view of the Commission, Senate bill is not the second coming of the Mandatory Borough Act or any similar legislation. Unlike the Mandatory Borough Act, Senate bill authorizes a measured case-by-case evaluation of proposed incorporations. Each petition will be evaluated on its merits. Proposals that do not meet the standards will not be approved. And as under current law, even if a petition does meet statutory standards, the Commission may and can reject the petition if there are sound public policy reasons to do so. So it is not legislation that automatically, in any short term or even long term, automatically confers boroughs on the unorganized area. I want to reassure the legislature and other interested parties that the Commission does not have a mission to foster boroughs for the sake of boroughs. We don't see any purpose in worsening the standing of local government in rural Alaska by prematurely creating boroughs that are apt to fail. And in this regard, I would simply point to the Commission's record. And that record will show that in recent years, the Commission has rejected several petitions to incorporate boroughs. Because they did not meet standards, the Commission has rejected several annexation petitions that would bring unorganized areas into organized boroughs because they did not meet applicable standards. We don't have a trigger finger to approve borough government where that would not meet standards. And as we discussed earlier, the Commission staff, with the Commission's concurrence, has also returned petitions that did not meet standards in law. The Commission fully recognizes that some rural regions do not have the economic and financial resources needed to fund borough governments. The fiscal note, if you have been provided that, the fiscal note that accompanies this bill reflects our concern that any borough established under Senate Bill 48 have a solid chance for success. The only new cost that is identified in the fiscal note, apart from the organizational grants that are already mandated, is the expense of conducting a thorough and independent fiscal analysis of the viability of each proposed borough. Establishment of borough governments has been a matter of conflict for as long as Alaska has been a state. I think Senator Fisher has reinforced that notion, and you are all familiar too with that. And with that contentious issue, history rather, it is easy to lose sight of the fact that borough governments have played an enormously positive role in the development of our state. Boroughs have been our main tool to influence economic development for community benefit. For example, it is hard to believe that urban and rural communities that have been were affected by oil pipeline construction, by oil and gas development, by large mining projects, by management issues of our forestry and marine and fisheries resources, by growing energy demands, by a growing tourist industry, and rapid urbanization would have managed better if they didn't have boroughs. And likewise, I think boroughs have, over time, proven to be a means to fund and deliver better local public services, accountable to local residents. As Senator Wilkins said, local government generally governs best in most matters. And finally, I would note, too, that despite all of the concern the Commission has expressed about disincentives to borough government, the proposed legislation removes one of those major disincentives, and that is in Section 1, where it excludes locally untaxed oil and gas property from being included as part of the property tax base for calculation of the local contribution to education. And that is a very significant disincentive in some areas of the state. But otherwise, Senate bill does not address all the other disincentives that have proven difficult to reform. The proposed legislation simply accepts those disincentives as a matter of fact and leaves them to be addressed elsewhere. In closing, I would say that the Commission has done its best to meet some goals it set for itself for this kind of legislation, that it devise an approach that would be uniformly fair, accountable, and in the framework of existing law. And we believe that the approach embodied in Senate Bill 48 uniformly implements the standards in law now for borough incorporation and still respects the diverse circumstances of different rural regions. We think that it provides effective checks and balances. An incorporation petition would require positive action by the Department of Community and Economic Development, that it is likely to satisfy the standards, it requires action by the Commission, and it provides for legislative veto of the Commission's decision if the legislature deems it unwarranted. Concludes my testimony, and I would be glad to respond to questions.
Do you have any questions? Senator, thank you.
In looking at the fiscal note, I just note here that for each petition, a financial consultant with expertise, will be utilized, and that's written in there. But do you see an increased activity with the Commission if this bill should pass in the form that it's in now, for adding additional workload to your executive director or to the Commission as a whole, where you'd have to meet more frequently, for example?
I would not, on behalf of the Commission, presume so. It is hard to guess. We don't have control over petitions that come to us. In some years, we have very heavy workload. We do on the boards now. Other years, it is less, and that's hard to predict. What I would say is this, and this applies to the organizational grants as well as the other expenses of the Commission and staff, that if there are expenses, it is because we are doing the work we are supposed to be doing. And I think that the fiscal note does not identify any additional expenses. I think it is a matter of waiting and seeing. If three borough incorporation petitions were voluntarily to come to the Commission, we would deal with them. Staff would deal with them. It might stretch out in time because of the workload, but we would do it within the budget that the legislature provides.
Dan, did you have some testimony for us today? Okay. Other questions?
I would just like for it, on the next time we meet, if we could have, because I didn't have that figure for the senator, and I think it's kind of unfair to ask the question then for me not to have that information, but in your disincentives, you talk about the loss of the national forest receipts, the loss of the PILT monies, the loss of state revenue, the loss of state capital match, and the 50% reduction of fisheries, business tax, so forth. I don't know if you've got those figures or where you're getting this information from, but I think it's something that I would like to...
I think we can certainly provide that information from staff work. And in some cases, if I could volunteer a point.
Sure.
What happens is when individual cities are brought within an organized area is the national forest receipts or certain other types of funds are redistributed. And so that cities would lose revenues to borough governments, and in some cases, cities outside the incorporated area would lose revenues to the incorporated area. We had one significant annexation petition a couple of years back that took in a large part of the unorganized area and would have affected in large ways and small the revenues of 15 or 20 cities within the larger region. And, they were concerned. And that is part of the whole texture of what we deal with, is that for various reasons that have nothing to do with the merits of the case, people find reason to oppose incorporations.
Especially when it comes to money.
We did run some numbers on that a few years ago, so I would imagine that you'd have those somewhere. You just have to update them. The one on the loss of redistribution of PILT money. We did it under... It's going to be real difficult for them to do that without giving them some boundaries. That's the problem. So we had to run them under your Model Borough Boundary Act of 91, or not Act, but your suggested boundaries from 91. So that may be all you can find. Is there any other questions? Did any of the other commissioners wish to testify? Would you please join us in?
I'll be for us, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Alan Teshi. I'm a member of the Local Boundary Commission. I believe the newest of the five commissioners, and I just wanted to address a couple of comments. Some of the questions here by the other senators raise fundamental policy issues that I think need to be looked at very carefully in this legislation. The first issue is, what about the right of people to vote in their local area before local government is incorporated? That will, of course, tax and regulate them in their daily activities. That is a fundamental policy issue, and of course it's something that certainly troubled the Constitutional Convention, but it also had to have troubled the Alaska Legislature when the Mandatory Boroughs Act was adopted in the mid-1960s in response to the fact that while our constitutional system for local government is excellent nationwide and has good reviews, we weren't forming local governments at the pace that was anticipated by the framers. And the legislature, in the lawful exercise of its powers, had to step in, basically, and force the incorporation of new local governments. And I'll say from the standpoint of Anchorage, certainly against the will of many of the people in Anchorage. Had the legislature not stepped in, of course, we would not have had the Greater Anchorage Area Borough, which, of course, later turned into the municipality of Anchorage. We certainly would not have had the local government there that we would have, but for the legislature's action. So the right of people to vote is very important. It's very fundamental, and it's something I think that should be carefully guarded. And yet, when you look at the difficult task of bringing about the formation of new local government, particularly in a 50 or 100-year time frame, as opposed to under immediate circumstances of budget fluctuations and the like, I think you'll find that a system, a carefully crafted system of bringing about the creation of new local governments, might be something to consider where people are reluctant to vote in local governments on their own. The second question I think is very important, that is, do we want to allow a system to be created that will force local government onto people that can't pay for it or where local government would truly be an economic strain. And I think that's very important because we don't want local government to be a burden. I think we want local government to be a benefit on local residents. What I would do is simply refer the members of the committee back to page 32 of the lookup that's been provided to you by staff that goes through the standards that we apply as a commission in determining whether or not a particular area meets the test for incorporation. And among those standards, the most important are the ability of the local community through its economy, through its people, and through its resources to actually support local government. Because it's, to my knowledge, never been the desire of the commission to bring about the formation of local government, which ultimately fails, and then to be back in front of the legislature asking for help or some form of relief. Earlier today, there was mention of ADAC, which was just a fascinating petition for the commission to consider, and that while it was highly unusual for the commission to consider, just because of its geography and its location and its history, of the issue, in my view, the primary issue before the commission was there enough of a local economy to support people who in turn would support local government? And it was not necessarily a slam-dunk case. That was very troubling for us. We had to look at that very carefully over a period of 4 or 5 months, and we required voluminous materials from the petitioners on that very issue, and we ultimately decided to approve the application. I don't think there's any interest on the part of anybody to take risk when it comes to forming local governments that ultimately will fail. The Local Boundary Commission is, of course, a quasi-judicial body. Its members serve without compensation. Its members have jobs and endeavors in other parts of the states or the state. The commission looks at these standards very carefully outside of a political process, and I think it does what the Constitution wanted it to do, and that is to provide an independent and fair means of deciding very difficult and what ultimately become, you know, very political local issues in a way that is still fair. We're not the most popular people when we leave a town on an annexation petition, but I think that we're probably fair, and we give people a fair shake. At least that's what our goal is, and we do it objectively and in consideration of the community's best interests. So those are just a couple of comments I wanted to make in response to the questions raised by the committee here. Thank you very much.
No, I'm fine.
Okay.
I'm just the oldest member of the community. I didn't know you meant. Well, there's one older. She's not here.
And I'm going to tell her what you said. As soon as we get out of here, I'm going to call her first. Okay. Any closing remarks, or we're all done? Okay. Well, I want to thank you all for coming and testifying. As I said earlier, we'll bring this bill up again at a later time. We will do a markup and work with the sponsor and all the other good things. And I'm going to try to have the committee meet on Wednesdays, just for you folks to know. But I will take this bill and have a Saturday meeting, and those that can make get public testimony, give people in the working and so forth an opportunity to testify on it. So, is there anything else to come before us today? Hearing none, we'll stand adjourned. Thank you.
And move on to the next room, huh?
Move to the next room.
Oh, that's right.